Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You've come to the show Edge of Truth. We're happy to have all of you with us again here today. My name is Will Gable, along with Sharon Quinn and our other guests here. We'll be coming online. Got a real treat for you today. Our guest call-in number is 619-789-4304, 619-789-4304. We also have our chat room open for you. You can bring your questions, opinions, ideas there. We're monitoring it the whole show. So today we're delving into a really interesting realm here. We have a guest speaker, Sharon Ann Denver, are kind of running along on the same track here to a degree. Our show is Unraveling What Happens When You Die. So this ought to really be very interesting for all of you, because both of these people have gone through this near-death experience, and they've kind of got a relevant story from each of their experiences, so we wanted to get that out there today. I think all of you are going to enjoy it. And then we have Natalie and Andrew are going to be listening in, asking questions potentially. So anyway, I'll turn it over to Sharon. Sharon Quinn, how are you today, Sharon?
I'm doing great, and welcome everybody to the Edge of Truth. We're always happy to invite you to join us and do the only thing that is the most important thing in the whole entire world and in our entire life, and that is to dangle our feet into the absolute truth that has been escaping humanity's recognition for eons and eons of time. And it raises and is bringing in so much attention and awareness, with people actually dying and living to tell about it. And why is this happening? Well, I have many thoughts about it, and I'm sure our guest today, who is Denver Wood, who had an after-death experience where he died for a good hour. Oh, my goodness, can that happen? I think so, because he's alive on the other line. And he's been interviewed on People's Magazine and stuff to talk about it. So these things actually do happen. And when other people, I just get such a charge out of it, because it's so funny. People want to come from the scientific background and tell me what my experience was about, endorphins in my head. And I really didn't have an experience. Yet it dramatically changes who you are, because you get to see who you really are, and you get a bigger glimpse in there's more to life than this human body that we're walking around in. For me, it was the awakening, not really an awakening. It was the confirmation and recognition of how to come back into our eternity and who we are. So I was reconnected back with our original, I'm going to call it gnosis, our original knowing of why we're in the game of life, who we are, why we're here, and how to get back home, where that is the strongest drive from a self-gnosis, higher self, who is who we are, awareness of our being as somebody in a mortal body. There's so much to know about that, and I've written books about it. And we've talked about this on our shows. So with that lead-in, I'd like to bring Denver Wood online and have him share the essence of his particular experience, so that we can broaden this conversation to really demonstrate and share with you just how important it is for us to see more than the traditional paradigms have led us to believe is the whole truth. It's really lacking in a lot of information, and people having near-death and after-death experiences are shedding a lot of light on what has been in the dark for a long, long time. Good morning, Denver.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Would you like to share a little bit about your experience with our audience, or where would you like to start with what compelled you to be here today and share with more listeners about having died and being able to still talk about it?
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned the scientific aspect, because I went to schooling for mechanical engineering. And so I have a very analytically minded perspective. And part of the whole reason I even did mechanical engineering was so that I had a better understanding of how the universe worked. And so it's kind of interesting because my accident kind of led up to it. And so the inciting incident was a ski accident where I hit a tree head first doing about 50 miles an hour. I broke every vertebrae in my back. I shattered my right rib cage. My left kidney split in half. My spleen exploded. It was pretty rough. And the interesting thing about it is I remember hitting the tree, and most people don't remember that kind of trauma. And so, and then to complicate matters, the ride down took me 4 hours to get to the hospital.
Okay.
And so it was a very unusual situation because it pushed all extreme. So when we talk about near-death experiences, the way I look at it is it's an invitation where where you mentioned like going home. So for me, when I hit the tree, basically my soul disconnected from my body.
Yes.
But what I was able to do was kept my soul in the body. And so my flight nurse specifically remembers on the drive down that I was he remembers me choosing to stay in this plane or in this reality. And so and what he described me as was a talking corpse, because he said I had no pulse and I had no blood pressure. And I had virtually no blood in my body. All he did was pump saline through my veins for an hour so they wouldn't collapse.
Wow. That's interesting.
And so,
defying of science that gets everybody's attention, isn't it? Initially.
It is. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because the part that science doesn't recognize is what it really comes down to is choice.
Exactly.
And it's such a personal thing. And you know, people nowadays, you hear about mindfulness and, you know, authenticity and consciousness and all these other things. And basically, because I was very well connected with my mind, body, and soul, basically the transition was very seamless for me with being invited.
As was mine.
I think that has a big impact on your ability to manipulate your ability to stay in this reality.
I think that's a very interesting point that you don't hear made very often. I'm glad you brought it up.
Exactly. And it's interesting because basically for the listeners to understand, when you're talking about something like this, the human language is too primitive to explain and truly understand the experience in which we're trying to do. I mean, it's like a mom trying to explain like the feeling of childbirth. I mean, even trying to do it is an insult to what it is. And so that's why you hear so many different explanations and perspectives, because each person has their own individual truth from their own unique perspective, and everything they've done in their life leads up to that perspective point. And so that's why people get so many different variations if people are wondering. And so what I've always looked for is the commonalities of them.
And commonality goes back to a universal principle that your presence, spirit, comprehends at the moment of death. If you are not filled with fear at the moment of your death, and that we are eternal, we are one, and our home is not on the planet Earth. It is beyond the Earth, preceding this entire life reality. Those are the words I'd give.
It's interesting you say that. It's interesting you use some of those words because, and just for the listeners to know, we haven't scripted this in any way, and I don't know much about Sharon's experience and things like that. So with a lot of, you know, a lot of people would ask me, oh, well, did you find God and all that type of stuff? And I was like, well, I was like, I had my connection to what people consider God. I was like, was fine. All it did was reaffirm what I already believed anyway. And so, but it's interesting though, because the word God has so many emotional connotations to it nowadays that I've given it a kind of a different name as you have. And what I call it is soul. So S-O-U-L-S, and it's an acronym for Source, One, Universe, Love, Spirit.
Okay, interesting. And that parallels everything I would talk about from a gnosis of self or self-gnosis perspective. And when we're talking about the same truth, which is our source, you're going to hear these commonality words that are going to be really saying the same thing through unique perspective, but in no way deviating. In other words, there's going to be an absolute correctness and harmony with what we're saying. That's how you know you're at that level of truth. There's no relative disparity.
Well, absolutely, and I agree with you. And that was, and that led me down. So, to get back to when I was in the ambulance, going down, I say that I had three near death experiences because I was technically invited three times. And so the door opened up and I was like, why are you asking me? I'm not going anywhere. And the door closed and then it kept opening up and I kept saying, just stop asking me. I'm not going anywhere. And so I was like, it was kind of interesting. And because to me, dying wasn't an option because I had made a promise to my mom when I was 15 to be the only man in her life who didn't leave her because my mom's an angel but she hasn't been treated as such. And so after my parents had an 8-year-long divorce and it finalized, I promised her I would leave her. And so that's why to me, it wasn't an option. And so, but after I woke up from a coma and things like that, I started thinking about the experience. And I started scientifically wanting to know, how did I keep my soul in basically a corpse? And my flight nurse called me a talking corpse. So I kept it in a corpse for as long as I did and still be alive now. And so I wanted to understand scientifically what occurred, what happened. Like, how did I do that? And so that's kind of the question that led me on the current path that I've been on. And I've basically started breaking everything down. The interesting thing is we talk about soul. Well, I was in a coma for 6 weeks and it took me, I remember when my soul reconnected with my body, which was a very, very wild experience. But the thing is the body I re-entered was completely broken. And so was my brain. And so it's almost like people who understand like technical hard drives and stuff, my brain was basically formatted. And so I had to relearn how to do everything. I lost all emotional connections and abilities. And I just had to start over from scratch. And so, but what I did was, is I took notes as I reconnected to my body and my brain. And so what I actually ended up doing was creating a roadmap to the soul to help lead other people back to their soul, to their childhood innocence and self. And so I've actually created that. And it's a very workable path and things like that, but it basically, hinders on what you're talking about as this universal truth. And so, but that's the purpose that's led me down.
From my perspective in listening to you, nothing you say boggles my mind, which is an affinity of recognition that is important about talking about this difference of being in the body and being out of the body. My approach to putting it all together follows a very different path than yours, which we're not one and the same, and that's way cool, but I didn't have your strong engineering mind either. I come from a very different type of perspective, that of a teacher, that I was in denial of being. I did have to own that in time. And in the process, I also was a very broken person, and my brokenness was what also relates to many, many people of being an alcoholic, being filled with pain, rage with life, all kinds of family dysfunction, wondering, you know, leaving a Catholic church against the grain of the family, and that created a lot of issues and a lot of tension for me personally.
I'm sure.
And I'm sure many people, when you're telling your story, you're facing that same prejudice, that same bias of belief. And it's a fear-based, at the very bottom, if we just did some prime fraction thinking, just reduced everything to its lowest prime, you're going to get fear is there. And the essence of our presence, our spirit self, has no fear. That is a juxtaposition that really changes everything, which actually means the truth of who we are counters everything the ego mind and fear-based thinking will imagine us be, even at its grandest fantasy. It still misses.
Well, it's really interesting you say that, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting you say that. And the reason why is because what people might be wondering is, well, why is it so hard for me to connect to that individual within me? And the thing that, mm-hmm. and what I was able to deduce is that the soul is pure, and the soul doesn't lie. And that's the reason why the soul has no need to yell. So the soul tone is very monotone for me. And I have to quiet myself down enough and tell my ego to piss off enough to be able to listen to it. Basically, I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I use this metaphor. Prior to the accident, who's driving my car? My ego mind and my body mind. And who knows where the hell my spirit is in that car. As I'm healing and I come back into ownership of who I am and I take down that energy field vibrating with fear and the ego mind, and as I bring it into my holy resonance, which vibrates totally with that absolute spirit that I am, that consciousness, now where's my ego mind and my body? In the back seat, and sometimes I tell the ego to shut up and get in the trunk.
Oh, I was going to say, sometimes I throw it in the trunk. And keep in mind, it's an old trunk, so it doesn't have the little emergency release. Okay? So,
I love it. I love it.
The interesting thing is what you're talking about is spot on. And so it's funny though, because I guess probably about 10 years after my accident, I reached the level of what people understand as enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because I was like, okay, well, this is just like when I was dead. So what the hell's the point? Why do you live a life? Because why do we live a life trying to attain enlightenment when we'll have plenty of that when we're dead? And so I was like, the whole 100% enlightenment thing, I've never understood. And so the way I break it down is similar to what you're talking about, is basically my perfect ratio, in my personal opinion, is an 80-20 split where I'm 80% soul and I'm 20% ego and body. And the reason why is because I believe we have to allow ourselves to enjoy and interact in a human experience. But the thing is I don't ever want the person in the trunk touching the steering wheel or throwing the handbrake when I don't want it to. And so, at a worst case scenario, on my worst days, I'm still 60% full. And so that way, and I grew up in a very alcoholic family, and I've never drank, I've never smoked, I've never done any of that stuff. And part of the reason is because of the, I like who I am, and I didn't want to do anything that changed that. And where I wasn't in control anymore, I guess you could say. And so I understand that one closely.
Right. And so, I did cross that line. I was an alcoholic, playing the alcoholic game in denial when I had my after-death experience. As a matter of fact, it was all about, you have to stop drinking like that. I knew I had to deal with that if I was coming back into the body. I had to do that. And it was a choice. And I love the word that you brought up, choice, earlier, because many people, when they have their near-death experiences, their choice is made for them. Their story is told as you will go back. You and I both are talking from a different perspective, which makes them, to me, a higher-level experience, more involved with the spirit self and less with the ego mind, because I actually had the choice. Are we going back into this body and then with certain shifts and changes, or are we going to be recycled back and take another life almost instantly? I chose obviously to come back to the body.
Well, and I think part of it is because I think it's part of our spiritual agreement. And one thing I'd like to point out too is that I have a leg still stuck in that realm. And so it's really too much information, so I've had to learn to filter it out. But I still it's weird because when you go to that plane or when you're invited, the laws of physics change. And so what time is changes. And so trying to figure out how to explain this to people has been one of the biggest challenges. And so I'd like to share a few examples to help people understand. And so people want to understand what it feels like to die. And for me, the closest explanation I can come up with, and it's worthless in comparison to the true feeling. But this is the best I can come up with what we understand as humans. And that is, if you think about a baby just being born, and it's handed to its mother for the very first time. When the baby's eyes meet the mother's eyes for the very first time, when you die, it feels like that, but you're the baby and you understand the significance of that moment. And so it's that connection of absolute unconditional love is for me the best way of trying to explain it.
Now, how I describe it, would you like to hear that?
Please.
Oh, we're having so much fun, aren't we?
Well, having humor, I mean, it helps.
Yes, it really does, and I just I spin on that myself. But what's interesting for me, the moment I was compressed to death in my accident, okay, and it was a slow compression, so I got to recognize moving into death moment by moment. And of course, I start off with my very human, very egotistical mind, my externalization of viewpoint in the world, this human body, who I am is this body and everything else. And God's out there, you know, very Catholic oriented ideas with a little bit of Hinduism smacked on the edges because I'm leaving the Catholic Church, but still have one leg there. So as I'm being smashed to death, I recognize a critical moment when the arguing with God and all the anger and rage I have in the world and everything else, immediately, like snapping your fingers, everything changed. I suddenly had a different level of awareness, consciousness, and attitude all at once. And it was, okay, I know what death is. I've done this thousands of times. I got the drill down. It's over. I'm leaving. And I'm not taking all that anger and rage over I was just expressing just a second ago. I forgive everyone. I'm taking only a loving care. I'm not taking any of this crap over. And boom, the next thing I know, I'm out of the body. I know how I'm going to transition out. I'm looking down at this smashed body. I see an elderly man who, out of love, heard my screaming previously. He's standing there having a heart attack. My presence sees him, just wafts over him, says, "You're not going to die. That's not right. You're here out of love. This is not for you to have to suffer at the moment." And I just immediately start doing my happy, the best way I can describe it is like a happy dance. I'm so happy to take that girdle off, which I considered my body, and move with freedom. I'm just like moving around. I'm being watched right now by Natalie. She's laughing at the way I was moving. And I'm just going, thank God I'm on that girdle. I love being my spirit self. So for me, it was freedom. And
well,
still love.
The thing is what people don't, it's really interesting because, and so I've been figuring out, because I've been relating this to quantum entanglement and string theory and quantum mechanics, and I've been really diving in and figuring out, like, how does it scientifically work? And figuring out, how does reincarnation work? How does spirits work? How do people get trapped here? And things like that, and I've been working on all that kind of stuff too on the back end, and so it's quite interesting. But what you're talking about is basically the human body is the anchor to this space.
Yes, I call it a vehicle. I get out of that car, and I'm back into my presence, which is eternal, and that's who I really am. I'm not
the body.
Huh?
Because you say a vehicle, but the thing is the only way to understand it from a human perspective, in my personal opinion, it's like take the car that you got first, when like your first car, but that's the car that you have for the rest of your life.
Yes, it's true.
And so you get to know that car really, really well. And
or the
so,
car gets
you know,
to know you.
And. Well, yeah, exactly, and it's a give and a take on when that thing breaks down. So but one of the things too is you talk about leaving your body. That was one thing I did not experience because I wouldn't allow myself to.
Okay. Yes,
and
I heard you say
because. Yeah, and so, but the other thing too is when people talk about the soul, there's also a energetic power behind it too, because when I woke up from a coma, my liver hadn't worked for a month, my right kidney hadn't worked for a month. I mean, I was in pieces. But when I re-entered, I told myself when I re-entered my body that I wanted to be out of the ICU in 24 hours. And I had been in there for 6 weeks. And I was out in 48 hours.
Wow.
For me, there was no like release of baggage, there was just a really seamless transfer. And so,
Denver, just to let our listeners know that we're about to go, we've only got 32 seconds left live, but for all our listeners, we're going to have another 15 minutes because the conversation is just too exciting to end straight out. You can pick up the rest of the show on the archives on the Edge of Truth page. So, Denver, back to you. I just wanted to let everybody know.
Okay. And if you want to connect with me, my email address is denver@unconditionalselflove.org if you have any questions for me directly. And I'm happy to answer whatever you have.
All right, so let's continue our talk. We've got about 15 minutes before now. We're not live, but we are in recording. So let's take advantage of that time frame.
And so I willed my liver to start working again, and I willed my kidney to start working again, and I have a really strong connection in my body of being able to manipulate how it works. And I've kept that since then.
Well, that very much fits your very engineering type mind, your very strong connection with science, and this very strong drive to use your intelligence to comprehend from that level of thinking and thought. And that is powerful, and it showed and has revealed certain things to you because that has been your strong inquiry approach, correct?
Yes, very much so. I'm the one who's always run into the fire, not run away. So, you know, it's to make sure that if I can put it out, or if I can understand it, or if I can save people who are stuck or trapped, fear has never really been something that I've embraced very much. That's not to say I haven't had it. I absolutely do. And I've had it in some extreme situations from past traumas and stuff like that. But I try and never let it. Fear does have a purpose. But the thing is we want it as a suggestion, not as a driving force.
Right, I agree. I like that.
Yeah, and so it's but I will say, so one of the things is people talk about purpose in life and things like that is I believe that we all choose to come down here, and I believe we make an agreement. And I'm very conscious of what my agreement was. But my lighthearted joke is the reason why I didn't go was because basically I'm too much of a pain in the butt to go. So, you know, God didn't want me back yet. So he's like, no, man, it took me, you know, generations, or, you know, millennia to get you down there. And my vacation is still going, you know, go ahead.
Oh, that was similar choice. And you bring up that key point because there's choice. There is some choice at death that most people from traditional thought do not realize they actually have. And I think that's one of the potent messages we bring back.
Well, and I think in all honesty, I think it's something that to have that choice, it's interesting because you to harness that choice within yourself, requires a great deal of introspection. So the more that you have, the more strength you have in your choice.
Does
that make sense?
Well, that makes a big component. I even see, from my perspective and my recognition of from Gnosis, and I'd love to talk to you sometime about Gnosis versus belief. I think we would have a amazing, let's just say, a kick-ass conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one of the things that you that has been a strong thread that I could hear in some of the things you were saying was about will, your strong will. I see willpower as an actual quality of our spirit essence, our eternal nature, our eternal self, and our will is always having to be at that crux of choice. Is it going to choose to believe and pursue limited ideas of that are in the mortal realm of life, or the eternal realm of our original existence that precedes life.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And the way I think about it is when, like, what aspect of yourself are you going to enable? And,
exactly.
You know, you want to, like, for me, like, my brain's crap and my body's crap, you know, but to be brutally honest, if I have to choose one, then I want a good soul, you know, because my soul's pretty good. You know, but everything else is crap. And so, but as long as my eternal one's pretty good, then I'm set, is how I look at it. And so, mm-hmm. You know, and so it's, but I believe that the amount of will that an individual has is directly connected to how connected they are with their deepest self or their soul. And so mm-hmm. the more connected you are to it, the stronger your will be. Is what my belief is.
Well, I would say from a gnosis perspective, they're inseparable. How much of it you can take ownership of and hold in your conscious mind while you're in a body mind determines your ability to direct that with deliberate intention. And
I
that's
agree.
How,
yeah, I think we're saying the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, we're going to use different words because we approach this from entirely different angles. But that doesn't...
Well, absolutely.
Truth is truth. Absolute truth will find its resonance and it'll flesh itself out to be even more of a holistic picture. And that's the beautiful thing of coming from our spirit self or our soul self, is because that level is a unity of oneness consciousness, and it has no desire, no inkling, no drive, no will for separation.
This is going to sound bad, but it's like a dog, you know. A dog has absolute unconditional love. And so, like, a dog is one of the most consistent things in the world because, you know, it's just, I train service animals, and so I always think about animals in that regard. And so, but it's just, they don't have ulterior motives. They don't have, you know, they're such a mirror for us, I guess you could say. And
I've done a lot of work
ahead,
with
sorry.
Dogs, and they're an interesting creature. I came back with a lot of coming rather than I see the soul itself as another vehicle that is the freest vehicle in a body mind for our actual presence. And it's the collective part that goes onto the wheel of life and death that we bring back as we keep evolving our understanding or evolving our willpower to align with this eternal, beautiful love that you're talking about that we both recognize is our truer nature. It's our true nature. I don't even want to say truer. It is our true nature. And
I agree. I agree completely.
And figuring out how to strip the veil that want to make it not so true is, from my perspective, the words I now use, and same as you, it takes a long time to articulate that which we have no vocabulary for. And to try to explain it. I could hear that frustration from you too, because what we're talking about really does not have an articulate point of view or a vocabulary. And I think with Aquarius pouring in and having all these experiences, we're finding more and more ways in which we have to create that dialogue, which means we have to also create the vocabulary and a constructive way to speak about it. And we're all recognizing from that presence, we are not inspired to want to combat each other. We don't want to be right and wrong. We want to figure out how to bring our experiences into a holism and really pull it together for what it is. And that is what turns us on, because it's that light and love, casting the true light to expose how love and light don't have anything hidden. There's nothing in the dark shadows. That's where the ego likes to hide out. That's where fear is lingering.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And as you mentioned earlier, fear serves for a very small purpose. But it does serve a purpose. Like, in other words, if I drive into a gas station and I suddenly feel a cold chill that says, I got to get the hell out of here, that's the gift of fear telling me that turns out later, 1 minute later, a guy walks out with a gun that was robbing the place.
Well, I look at fear more in a male perspective, and so it's a little simpler. So to me, fear is like, I put my hand on a burner as a kid, and fear is saying, hey, dumbass, don't do that again.
I agree with that, too.
That's my practical look of it, because the way you explain it is, I think that's connected to intuition. And I think that is really connected to our soul. So, but that's my personal opinion.
Well, I hear people just want to say, if you're coming into your presence, you'd have no fear absolutely whatsoever. Well, that's in the realm that precedes this, which is our home, there is no such thing as fear. But in the game of life, we have instructional fears, like you said, don't touch that. And higher levels of it functioning too that says, get the hell out of here. This isn't a safe place to be.
Yeah, I agree.
It's awful.
Well, I think that's part of the vehicle about having our fight for life so that we have some level of self-protection in split second moments. And so where our soul doesn't have enough time to deduce what's going to happen or what occurs. Now, one of the things that I learned that you can do is that you can use your soul to write over your fight or flight response. And you can actually give your fight or flight response specific commands in specific situations.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the ways that you manage panic and things like that as well.
Right. We have a lot of empowerment abilities that really traditional thought has not given us a really good track for using it in a way that's practical. We've turned it into all kinds of stuff. We've twisted it and turned it. I like to say that traditional knowledge had a golden thread of truth that you and I are talking about. And I'm going to call it the golden thread of truth because it never changes. But the woolly blankets different religions, different people have put upon that to give it their personal spin, well, that can be off base. But the golden thread, if we can pull that out, gives us clarity, and it gives us unity.
I study most religions, most major religions to some degree. Mm-hmm. And part of it was trying to do exactly what you're talking about, is I was trying to find the commonality. What was the deeper truth of all of them? And and basically, when like what I came down to was the way to get the truth was just removing man's ulterior motive and looking at what was left. And looking at some of these loving actions and things like that. And so that's how I've ascertained it. And so I was raised Christian and I have Christian beliefs, but at the same time, I don't believe that, people who are Islamic, I don't believe that they're wrong, because to me, God loves everyone. Whether or not you love God is up to you, there's a lot of kids in this world who do not accept their parents' love. Okay.
That's right. I love what you're saying there, and it points to something as one of my favorite reorganizing what I call manipulative translations. And one of them is the idea where everybody gets all into the woo-hoo, wow, that's so beautiful. Many are called, but few are chosen. Well, implied in that is this horrible idea that some people are better or more loved than others. Disgusting. It's got nothing to do with our origins. But it's more like this. All of us are called. Why do so few of us choose back?
There's a good reason for that. So it's interesting because, to get into a little bit more detail of this, so the roadmap I created, so... Oh, yeah. So...
I know.
Should we take questions?
So, Well, what I'd like to do is, because we only got 16 seconds before we're literally going to go dead, what I'd like to do invite you back next week and continue this deep conversation. Up for that?
I'm open to that. I'm happy for that. I'm happy to do that.
Everybody, tune in next week and listen to the best talks ever.